T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That's kind of what we've been really trying to point out, is just how somebody can complement the other pitchers in the rotation. Being left-handed is really helpful. How you line up in that division. I've had pretty good success with the teams in that division. At times, but just now looking at where teams, who they have in their lineups and what they don't do well against. That's how you want to base your rotation off of.
You're listening to the Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
That was Cole Hamels appearing on the White Sox Talk podcast, saying, "Hey, I'm interested in the Sox. They contacted me. They said they're going to circle back. There's a few others that they want to talk to." I think most of us agree that they need to add a couple pitchers to that starting rotation. You've got Sports Radio 670 The Score. And I was just talking about Sean Zerillo's column on some of his future bets for the 2020 baseball season and how he went in on the White Sox. And Sean joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Follow him on Twitter by his name, at Sean Zerillo. As I mentioned, he writes for theactionnetwork.com. How you doing, Sean?
Doing great, Joe. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.
Talk some baseball in the offseason.
How about it, man? I didn't think I'd be here. We've got Bears-Cowboys in a couple of days, but I think we're actually going to have a hot stove this year, and it's so exciting, especially after the last couple of off seasons.
Yeah, I was looking back on some stuff right before the season last year, emails and stuff I'd gotten in February, and there's lines in there about the fact that Craig Kimbrell still hadn't been signed, Dallas Keuchel still hadn't been signed. So it's funny to think back, what is it, like 8 months or so at this point, and it was such a different landscape in terms of getting these free agents signed and getting them contracts, the fact that Grandal got a multi-year deal, seeing the Moose getting multi-year deal. It's nice to see these guys get paid and kind of see the labor talk stuff subsiding a little bit.
Absolutely. I'm sitting here the first week of December, Sean, and on the north side, it's like, okay, which guy are they going to trade? They're going to trade somebody. Is it going to be Bryant? Is it going to be Contreras? Is it possibly Rizzo, as Jeff Passan was writing earlier today? And then on the south side, they give this big contract to Yasmani Grandal, and there are a lot of chatter about Zach Wheeler, and I just mentioned maybe Cole Hamels ends up filling out the rotation, get Rodon possibly at some point this season. But I was reading from your article on theactionnetwork.com, and you put your big World Series futures bet on the White Sox at 75-1. Tell me about your process. How did you land on the White Sox?
Yeah, so kind of anytime I'm going through futures, I think it's kind of a process of elimination with regards to finding where you can attack, division-wise, seeing which teams might have a path to actually making the playoffs and not just getting a wild card spot, but actually locking up a divisional spot and a divisional round spot during the regular season. I think that that's key, because even with those teams that are going to be in the wild card hunt, you're still going to find pretty nice prices at them on them in September, as they're sort of in the race and battling with a few other teams. You can usually identify the best teams of the bunch, and they usually end up getting out of there. So, the White Sox, you still could have had it over 30-1 in September of last year. So I wanted to hunt for a team that was at a really big number, something over 60-1 in a division that I thought was attackable, that, I could see some regression with the teams who finished at the top last year. Mm-hmm. And the White Sox, just down the stretch, I could see everything coming together with the flamethrowers they have in their rotation. So I actually have, Don Cooper was the pitching coach for my high school coach when he was coming up. I've been focused on Cooper for a long time.
I love Coop.
I'm a New Yorker myself, but
have you ever heard Kurt Coop in an interview? He's very entertaining.
No, I've never obviously had a chance to talk to him, but from my perspective, he's a pretty quiet guy. I don't know him in the Chicago media.
No,
how vocal he is. But
no, he likes to talk. He likes to talk.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, it just must be that East Coast bias with the media. We really don't get the clips and stuff out here. But
yeah,
you know, just kind of seeing how all this is coming together for them, all the flamethrowers they have in their rotation. I mean, they have, I believe, four of the top 10 average fastball velocities once Kopech gets back in there, you know, in their rotation potentially. I really liked what I saw from Ronaldo Lopez last year, especially down the stretch. Obviously, Giolito, you know, really made a star turn, but it's really everything that they have coming together offensively as well. You know, the way Eloy really kind of came into his own at the end of last year. I couldn't be a bigger fan of Nick Madrigal. You know, his plate discipline numbers in the minor league levels that he's hit so far are absolutely ridiculous. The guy's walking, you know, three times as much as he's striking out. This is like Alex Bregman stuff. I mean, he doesn't have the same kind of power as Bregman, certainly doesn't profile as the same type of player, but he profiles as definitely an above average regular and potentially more. So they have stuff coming together. They're prepared to spend. You know, they had that leftover money from last offseason. Clearly Grandal was a big target of theirs, and I don't think they could have landed on a better person in terms of working with their staff and getting extra strikes. And, you know, they still got more to spend. Need to add some left-handed power. But I really see a path where, you know, the White Sox could be on the top of the Central Division and a serious dark horse next year.
And somehow Moncada's year went under the radar, I guess, because many were paying more attention to what Tim Anderson was doing. But, yeah, there weren't any complaints about that Chris Sale trade last year when people are seeing what Moncada was doing once he was in the lineup every single day.
No question, and they still have some options. You know, if they want to go after a guy like Rendon, they could still move him over maybe to second base potentially. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the right path. I kind of have a hunch that Rendon's going to end up with Texas.
Sounds like that.
This weird hunch, and they could be secretly competitive too with, you know, adding Kyle Gibson, and they have some nice arms as well, but yeah, the White Sox were just, I trust my gut with this stuff, you know, truly, but I put probabilities on everything, and I'm very much a model numbers better, but this was something that kind of my gut and the numbers kind of aligned, and, you know, it just felt right. So I was happy to go after it, but there's a long road ahead, and they need to mm-hmm. fill in some extra pieces if they really want to be competitive.
How would you feel about your bet if we find out shortly that they sign Zach Wheeler and maybe down the road they get Cole Hamels for a couple of seasons?
Yeah, no, that's, you know, certainly need to add rotation depth until Rodon comes back. You know, if hopefully Kopech is 100% ready to go, but you never know after Tommy John surgery. He could have hiccups. He could, you know, need to be eased back into it or, you know, start off the season and then kind of have his innings limited. So yeah, they definitely need to add at least to the back end of their rotation. Adding a middle of the rotation or top end of the rotation guy like Wheeler would really go a long way towards helping them. One guy I'm looking at, and I'm not sure how much he's come up for the offense, is Japanese player Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. He's a left-handed hitter, tons of power. I've heard some rumblings that the White Sox are interested just because they seem to be very willing to go into the international market to get players now, which is really cool that they're kind of establishing that identity. But, you know, Moustakas was a guy who I totally could have seen fitting in there now that he's with the Reds. So I think, you know, adding a guy like Marcell Ozuna or maybe going overseas and adding, you know, a Western-owned player like Tsutsugo could really go a long way to adding power to the middle order and just extending the lineup. They've got a bunch of guys who are, you know, above-average hitters, and not just, you know, when you think about him, but if you dig into the numbers, Tim Anderson's year last, you know, it was inflated by some BABIP numbers, but it was otherwise pretty legitimate. He definitely had a breakout. So you've got a pretty extensive lineup of above. You had a starter, you had a, you know, a DH or a corner outfielder to really solidify this, and let's go.
What are your thoughts about Nick Castellanos? We saw him on the north side last couple months. He just went on a tear. He seemed to be the only guy that was actually hitting for the Cubs after that trade, and maybe going back to the AL Central. Don't know what the market's going to be for him. That's obviously a big part, but what are your overall thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's, you know, his power was always kind of hindered by playing at Comerica. He's just deeper outfield there, so ended up with more doubles than, you know, you would expect from a double to homer ratio. But I think he showed in Wrigley that he was able to hit more balls out. So his defensive metrics are on the rise. Was never a good defender anywhere near it in at third base, but moving to the outfield, he's actually trended towards average. You know, the knock on him has always been his defense, but the guy can hit. So yeah, I mean, he's a professional hitter. If you think he's capable of, you know, playing a scratch defensive corner outfield position, I certainly think he's, you know, a multiple win player moving forward and somebody who's going to pay off his contract on a multi-year deal.
And then there's the Cubs, other side of town. Sean Zarillo from the Action Network with me on Sports Radio 670, The Score. You've got Joe Ostrowski. It certainly seems like for them to get younger with the pitching, since they failed in drafting and developing arms, that they're going to have to trade one of their big guns. Probably not Baez, but maybe Contreras, possibly Bryant, and even Rizzo has been brought up. I don't see that happening, but it's certainly a possibility that Theo Epstein keeps saying there's nobody untradeable on this roster after they missed the playoffs. It seems like they want to have a bit of a reset as an organization, figure out the guys that are going to be here for the long haul. Which player would you trade?
Probably Bryant. You know, he had a really down 2018, was injured all year, bounced back, you know, pretty nicely last year, OPS over 900. So I think his trade value is at the point where you're probably, I can't imagine them trading Baez, so I'm just kind of disregarding Baez. At the Little League World Series last year, they, you know, every single kid who came up, his favorite player was Javier Baez. So I can't imagine a world where they trade Baez. But yeah, I think, you know, Bryant's, his relationship with the Cubs has never been great, right? Since they initially held him back, and he's filed for an appeal to get that extra year of service time. So it doesn't seem like they necessarily have the best relationship between the player and the team.
Scott Boras' client, probably going to free agency. Yeah,
yeah, no question. I'm not sure if is Rizzo a Boras' client as well. I'm not sure offhand.
I don't believe he is. I don't believe
yeah.
So. He's got a couple club options coming up.
But it's, you know, it's always just kind of seemed since the beginning like Bryant was going to end up somewhere else. You know, they certainly had him on every billboard and made him the star of the city after the World Series, but that relationship has just kind of always seemed kind of fractured. So I think now might be the time to get out of it if they want to and get a haul of young pitchers potentially to reload that rotation. That was the oldest rotation in baseball coming into the year last year, and we saw what happened with it. It just, you know, it's a bunch of guys declining into their later years, and it's not going to be something that's going to carry you into the postseason. It's going to kind of fade off as the year goes.
Rizzo, by the way, not a Boras client, Addison Russell was, but he was non-tendered yesterday. That was the big news there. Sean Zarillo, the Action Network, Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Sean, what were some of the other MLB bets that you made when you were out in Nevada?
Yeah, so what they have really available right now, you know, Super Bowl features, World Series features everywhere, pennant, some places, and then the Westgate has most home runs and most wins, just kind of a fun prop market to attack. Most home runs is, you know, one of my favorite things to bet every year because you could slip some long shots in there. So really, I set some fair odds, kind of group guys into buckets based upon, you know, how many home runs I would expect them to hit. And then I didn't really know what I was going to find when I had them pull the odds for me. I knew Nelson Cruz might be a guy I was targeting, and his odds were where they were when they opened, I believe. I set him at about 40-1, and he was 80-1 when I bet him.
Wow.
Nelly, I mean, no 40. He would have to have basically the best season ever by a 40-year-old hitter, or one of the best seasons ever. But you know, it's a different era, certainly. And his power metrics were off the charts last year. He missed some time. He paced for over 50 home runs. He would have been right there with Alonso at the end had he stayed healthy. So his number's ridiculous. Stanton's price, you know, I didn't expect to bet Giancarlo Stanton. I had pegged him as the favorite. If you know, I mean, even if you just go on Fangraphs, publicly available sources, and look at projections that are already up, you know, Stanton's 6 or 7 home runs clear of the rest of the field in terms of projections. If he stays healthy, he should lead the league in homers. And I believe he was the 4th or 5th choice on the board at 20-1. He should have been 10-1. I believe he opened at 10-1. So that was just kind of a, you know, one of those that you see a number and you're like, oh, I guess I got to play this. Didn't really anticipate on betting them, but it happened. The one I really like, though, I also bet Framil Reyes at 100-1. But the one I really liked was Miguel Sano at 100-1. I think we really saw him bust out in the second half of last year. His power metrics are pretty much up there with everybody, both in terms of, you know, average exit velocity, number of barrels he's getting per plate appearance and per bat. He ranked second in per batted ball event and fifth per plate appearance. So he's, you know, he's in the top five in terms of batted ball metrics. And I think with a full season worth of plate appearances at age 27, he could get to 50, certainly. So that's really it in terms of home runs. The guys that I targeted, I mean, there was guys like George Springer and stuff. You know, if you projected out their pace last year, Springer was on a 50-homer pace, but the odds just weren't right. So certainly always just have to take the best numbers, not necessarily bet on the guys who you think will win it. And then in terms of wins leaders, the two were both over 60-1. You know, Kershaw was the third choice, I believe, as early as 2 years ago. You know, it's really taken a hit in terms of reputation, not only with his inability to make 30 starts a year, but
your phone broke up for a second, Sean. What number did you get Kershaw at?
Kershaw was 60-1, and okay. Bieber was 50-1.
Okay.
You know, Kershaw I had set closer to 40-1. Not as much value in the wins market as there is in the home run market. Wins are so tough to predict. You know, you're not going to find as big of a price on the guys who will probably get there. And it's just, you know, the buckets are much smaller because everybody's kind of projected between 13 and 16 wins as opposed to home runs where you can kind of get the gap between 35 and 50. So, you know, that's kind of a dart throw. I think Bieber being in a, you know, softer division like the Central, having the Tigers and the Royals to play against and really showing that he's a top 10 pitcher last year, it's backed up by the metrics. If you didn't get a chance to watch Shane Bieber, please watch him. He's absolutely tremendous. So I think he's just a nice little dart throw to continue to break out. And then, you know, Kershaw's had his spotty injury history, and I think his stock's taken a bit of a hit because of, you know, another postseason meltdown. But at the same time, he's still Clayton Kershaw, and he's healthy coming into the year. So he's certainly a viable candidate as anyone else to get the wins lead. I mean, he shared it 2 years ago. A bunch of pitchers had it 18. So, those are a couple of dart throws for now. You know, when divisional markets open up, certainly going to be taking a look at Oakland in the West, the White Sox in the Central, absolutely. You know, the AL East, I think the Yankees have a chance to run away with it this year. They might be the World Series favorite in my mind. And then in the NL, it's, you know, the East is kind of a mix-up again. The Central is kind of a mix-up again. Maybe the Reds could take a little step up. And in the West, I actually like Arizona a little bit. I'm a big fan of the Diamondbacks last year and how they kind of reloaded. And I think they could keep it going this year in terms of just their depth organizationally. And, you know, they have really good pitching. Zach Allen is a great addition for them.
I like a lot of those, Sean. There is a lot of value. So, obviously, you jumped on this early. You're ready to go. Your average sports bettor, if they do some props like this or some futures, they're not really getting down until March or April. But how much would you say, how important is it to get on these numbers early? Because once word's out, especially when you write a column like this, and then the White Sox start making moves, like they add Grandal. You mentioned in your column how much the odds have already changed.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you really like a long shot, I think now's the time to do it. It's funny. I was flying to Vegas for a separate reason. You know, I'd already had somebody proxy my future for me, but I was going there separately, and the Grandal news popped up on my phone the minute I landed. And I immediately scrolled on the Caesars app to check the live odds, and they dropped the 30-1.
Wow.
So it's really something that during the off season, I mean, the winter meetings are currently going on. You know, the slightest bit of news can affect odds. Yeah, Bryce Harper signing last year, the Phillies odds plummeted. They actually plummeted a little bit before the signing was announced, which was indicative of the fact that he was going to go there or Machado was going to go there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can kind of use the betting market to evaluate where it looks like players might be going. But if you have an inkling that a player might be headed somewhere or that a team is taking a different direction, then it appears that they might be taking, this is the time to hunt for long shots, certainly. Mm-hmm. I'm not an advocate of betting favorites at this time of the year. You know, you're going to find if you just go and, you know, search, if you go to Sports Odd History, there's a bunch of good resources. But if you look at, you know, season opening lines for some of these top World Series contenders and compare them to the odds that you could get at the start of the playoffs, it's silly to be laying your money out this early. You can basically get the same odds.
Yeah. Even if you look at the beginning of the year, like Alvarez, AL Rookie of the Year, he was 200-1. Like, you can hit on some of these. I was looking at Lucas Giolito at a time. He was leading baseball in wins, and he was 200-1 when the season was starting. So some of these guys that sound like long shots, if your process is right, you might hit on one of these big numbers.
No question. Actually, one of my favorite bets that anybody had told me about before last year was they had bet Ryan Yarbrough to lead the league in wins. And I thought about it, and I was like, that's genius. You know, if you think that, you know, the Rays are going to just go full blow with the opener, there's certainly going to be the potential for one of these teams to just key on one pitcher, and the guy's going to win like 18 games in 1 year out of the bullpen.
Wow.
It's going to happen eventually if this opener thing keeps up.
Yeah, good stuff.
So, we might see, you know, eventually, like you said, some dude at 200-1 come in here who, you know, nobody was looking at before the season, but the minute it's over, we all go, oh, okay, that makes sense. So yeah, you know, think about it. Don't just fire away at guys that, you know, you like, or guys you think will do something. Try to take more of a holistic or analytical approach and not only think about it, but also put some numbers behind it. And look at some projections. There's a lot of free projections out there, and they can kind of guide your hand as to, you know, whether or not players stack up against one another in the way that you think that they do.
Good stuff. Sean Zarillo, theactionnetwork.com. Thanks again, Sean. We're going to have to catch up once again, especially once those win totals are out. They keep pushing them a little bit earlier every single year. I think it was last year around January, but that's always a fun conversation as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Win totals is probably my favorite betting market of all. They usually come out late January or early February, like you said. So happy to come on again and talk about those.
All right, Sean Zarillo. Follow him on Twitter by his name, at Sean Zarillo. I can't believe some of the value that he found out there. I mean, Stanton at 20-1. I know that's one of the names near the top of the board, but Giancarlo Stanton to be the home run leader at 20-1? Or Kershaw at 65-1? Can he stay healthy? That's always the question. But he's on one of the best teams. They're going to get you your regular season wins. You know the Dodgers are going to do that. The question is what's going to happen in the playoffs.
February 7th was when win totals came out last year, by the way.
Oh, okay. I think it's good when they do it after the Super Bowl. I hope they don't do it before. But sometimes these companies, everybody's looking for the press, so they might try to do that. But he made some really good bets. But the reason we had him on, at the White Sox, 75-1. As you can tell, the man knows exactly what he's talking about. Bottom of the hour, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Northwestern Basketball hosts number 3 Michigan State, the new Welsh Ryan Arena, on December 18th. Tip-off set for 7 p.m. Tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. We got Bears-Cowboys in 2 days. A few things jumping out to me, and there's a pretty long list of Bears not practicing so far this week. We'll get to that next. Joe Ostrowski with you on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
He's one of the most physical running backs in the league, man. And it's going to be a huge task. The guy runs the ball with like he's angry. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be our job to make sure he feels us.
That's Khalil Mack. Earlier today, talking about this matchup on Thursday against the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, when you think about that Cowboys offense, along with Amari Cooper, Dak Prescott, you think about that backfield, Ezekiel Elliott. That's my biggest concern from the Bears' viewpoint, is what are they going to do to stop Zeke? Because as long as Akiem Hicks is still out, and maybe it's just one more week, running between the tackles has been a problem ever since Hicks has been gone. What are you going to do to stop the run? And they haven't even faced some of the better backs in the league. Well, they will on Thursday night. And what's so good about Dallas is if the run game isn't working, they can go, they can hurt you with the pass. And they have multiple guys to go to. We're talking about Cooper. How many times have you seen Cobb beat the Bears for a big-time touchdown throughout his entire career? Gallup, a good player, too. So you start to see with some of that talent and still a very good offensive line why they lead the league in yards per play. Now, what's interesting to me is in some ways these teams are so similar. Aside from the 500 record, both of them sitting here at 6-6 going into the final quarter of the season, both very high expectations. Both fan bases were talking about a Super Bowl this offseason. It's been very disappointing. Difference is the Bears don't have a shot at winning their division. Dallas still does because nobody wants to win the NFC East. The Bears are beating the bad teams and losing to the average to good ones. Aside from Minnesota at Soldier Field in September. Dallas, it's pretty similar. They're beating up on the bad defenses, and they're losing to the good ones. Kevin Fishbane mentioned this earlier today, and I think he wrote it in The Athletic too. The Dallas Cowboys are 1-5 against top 11 defenses, but they are 5-1 against bottom 11 defenses. And obviously the Bears don't fit into that bottom category. But I'm just interested in the matchup. It's more than the playoff odds are discussed ad nauseum. And they are remote. Even if the Bears win out, go 4-0, there's still a bit of a... It's going to be tough for them to get in. Football Outsiders, 3.6% shot. 538, a 3% shot. Those are the numbers. And on 538... Over the next 3 weeks, you can click on wins. If you click on wins for the Bears, wins over Dallas, Green Bay, Kansas City. Sean, what do you think they have the Bears' chances at making the playoffs? If they beat Dallas, Green Bay, and Kansas City, and so they're sitting there with 9 wins going into the last week.
It has to be still lower than 50%, but I would say because they still have to have Minnesota lose games, I would put it at 28%.
Pretty good. It's 23%. If they go 3-0,
that's at Essex. That's at St. Xavier.
Dak, Rodgers, and Mahomes. It's pretty close. Wasn't bad. Where'd you go to school?
St. Xavier, the Harvard of the South Side.
You better. Wait a second. Where are they located?
103rd and Pulaski.
Okay.
Which is like 4 blocks away from my high school.
When did you know? Like, I'm going over there.
My senior year. whenever registration day was.
I wasted some time out of high school after I finished up at St. Pat's. I went to the junior college by my house. I'm like, what am I doing?
That's what I did.
I just cared so little. Like, you know, when I went to Columbia, I'm like, I'm starting over. I don't even want any of those credits coming over because now I'm going to take it seriously. It's still 23% if they win those 3 games going into the final week. Yeah, the door's cracked open, whatever. It was good that the Seahawks won. That helped the Bears a tiny bit. What we're talking about, 3%. 3%. I just want them to extend the season. That's all I'm looking for. Even if they run the table, it doesn't mean they're getting in. That Rams loss was a killer on Sunday Night Football. Because now they own the tiebreaker over you. See, but that was something we weren't even talking about going into that game. It's more about golf, Trubisky on the big stage, and got Donald on one side, Mac on the other. Made for an interesting matchup. What happened last December over at Soldier Field, and then what it's going to look like this time. The Nagy, McVay, young offensive-minded coaches, supposedly. How is it going to play out? But we were even saying, wait, this could be for the tie. This could be for the final wild card. This could end up being your tiebreaker. But it was. And Mitch looked so good. 7 points for the Bears. It did look better. And it has looked better over the last month. I mentioned the Bears injury report. Okay, they've got one more day of practice tomorrow. And then the game status will come out. But here's your list of Bears who did not practice today. Prince Amukamara for the second straight day. Did not practice. He's dealing with the hammy, but he's going around doing radio last night. Ben Broniker, tight end. Still concussion protocol. Taylor Gabriel, concussion protocol. Nagy talked about that today. I wouldn't expect either of them to play on Thursday. Bobby Massey still has the ankles, not practice this week. Danny Trevathan, of course, as expected. If you're going to miss Prince Amukamara this week, I know he was torched early on in the Detroit game, but that's pretty alarming. And then when you look at the Cowboys side of things, it's not as bad. The guys that actually missed practice, you have Sean Lee. He was limited on Monday, but he did not practice today. They mentioned pectoral / non-injury. Van Der Esch did not practice. So they're missing a couple guys, and that's expected at this point in the season. But how much is the Bears defense going to allow? Late in games, we've seen them allow touchdowns. And as far as this past Thursday, it was all about the slow start. Lions come out, they have two touchdown drives to start the game, and the Bears defense was the Bears defense after that. Because if you're forced, if you need the Bears to get into the mid-20s as far as points go, it's going to be tough. But you want to see it from Mitchell Trubisky, if anything. If it's not about the playoffs, it's about the evaluation of Mitchell Trubisky against some good teams. We know he can carve up the Lions, and I don't understand why they want to play man, but they keep on doing it against him. We saw him carve up a terrible Redskins club. But what are you going to do against the good teams? That's why people, that's the other reason people talk about the schedule so much. One, makes it very, very difficult. We talked about the remote chances that they can actually make the playoffs, but they're facing good teams. They haven't played well against good teams. Also haven't played well, Trubisky, hasn't played well in primetime, under the lights. So what's he going to do? Dallas, Green Bay, Kansas City, and Minnesota. I know a lot of people want to say, well, they're definitely going to bring in competition. Well, they're not going to get that fifth-year option on Trubisky. I don't think they've made their mind up on anything. And when they see something positive for the next month, and then they can make the argument that, wait, we saw pretty good Trubisky for a couple of months here. If he could stay healthy. I don't know that fifth-year option's off the table. That would be in excess of $24 million. So it isn't time to quit on this Bear season, because what we'll be talking about all offseason, what are they going to do with that quarterback position? You can't bring back the exact same situation that you had a season ago. Can't have that. You've got to have some real competition. And teams that actually had real competition, like in Tennessee, look what's happening. Now they're going on a run. Maybe they get into the playoffs on the AFC side. The problem for them, similar spot to the Bears. They're making a run right now, and they're putting points on the board. That isn't similar. But the problem is, their tough schedule at the end. They have the toughest schedule in the NFL left, and the Bears have the second toughest. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. At 9 o'clock, we'll check in with Mitch Armantrout of the Sun-Times. He's been covering the sports betting, and an interesting story today about the projections for sports betting. That could, it could be like Vegas here in Chicago coming up in a few months or whenever they decide to launch that. We'll get into that at 9 o'clock. Joe Ostrowski with you. You've got 670 The Score. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. I'm laughing. I just saw the very top text coming back. And you can text us at 67011. I hate to be this type of fan, but I'm hoping Trubisky falls flat on his face these last four games, so the discussion of picking up that fifth-year option is completely off the table.
Mitchell Trubisky.
No, he said Trubisky. I call him Trubisky. You can go many different ways with it. I don't think you're a horrible fan because you've made up your mind. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to be bad the rest of his career. But seen enough. If there's how many? 35, 36 professional starts? What was that, Brandon?
I was going to say, the texter sounds like he has a pretty common viewpoint, if I do say so myself. I think a lot of people are in that position where they think that they've seen enough, and they don't even need that fifth year. They know already that this guy's trash.
It's been, if you count the playoff game, 38 starts now, and what we saw last Thursday was his first career late fourth quarter game-winning touchdown drive. First time. And you could say last year that, well, they were leading most of the time, they didn't really need those. And that's certainly fair. But what are we usually talking about? Well, he put them in position to win. He put them in position, and Parkey didn't do his job. Or, well, see, they hit the field goal here. The two-minute Mitch is great. It's year three. It's the end of year three. We're supposed to know by now.
Look at this text. Trubisky. That's a good one.
Yeah, we can go all day with the Trubisky pun. A punt? Oh, yes, punt.
As long as I don't hear Trubisky anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't hidden from it. I've made up my mind on the guy. Has he looked better over the last month? Yes, against the Lions twice and against the Giants. And you can't just push that to the side. I understand play the teams on your schedule, but it's got to be part of the conversation that he's had the most amount of success this year by far, and it's not even close against the Redskins and the Lions twice. And what's he done against everybody else? Well, his quarterback rating's in the 70s. That's how he's done against everybody else. In year three, you're two of the offense. This is supposed to be 202. I mean, we can go over the same thing again and again if you want. But, I mean, what we think and what the front office believes could be two different things.
I do wonder because
we're not taking him in the draft, right? None of us were taking him in the draft, but the guy that did, what does he really think? He said a few weeks ago he needs to play better, and that's as much as we've heard from the hiding GM under his desk right now at Hallis Hall.
They did do the thing with Kyle Fuller, and I know Kyle Fuller is a different situation because it's not their guy. It wasn't a guy they drafted.
Emery, yeah.
But they did decline his fifth-year option,
yes,
let him play it out, and then re-signed him. So I do wonder if they think,
oh God,
you know, what if we decline that option and then we look to re-sign him for a cheaper deal than that 24-year fifth option would be?
This is almost the worst possible scenario. Because no, seriously, because everybody assumed, well, you'll know after 3 years, but you don't know. Or we think you're not going to know over the next four games. Four games from now, we think you're not going to know. I think we know. When you're saying we don't know, if the front office is saying that we don't know yet, we're going to wait, let them play it out, bring in some competition, see how it goes in year four, you know then, right? You know. You just don't want to admit it. You want to keep it going. Let's drag it out another year when you have a, quote, championship defense right now.
It's tough to let go of your best friend. I think that's what Matt Nagy's going to have to deal with.
Is it Nagy or is it Pace?
Might be both.
I
mean, the way that Nagy treats him, it seems like they're best friends.
That's a complicated love triangle.
Maybe he has to treat him that way, or he thinks he does. Nagy didn't want him. He was in Kansas City. He coached the guy he wanted. He coached him for a year.
But he said he was a project, so maybe he's liking the project. Maybe he's liking the task.
I trust the project.
I was watching. I get so much entertainment out of this. I don't know if people do this, but when Nagy talks to the media, and just about every day, I look on the Bears' Twitter. They give the feed to the Periscope, and I pull it up just for the entertainment. I know Nagy's not going to say anything, but I am there for the Periscope comments, and they are so good. Every single day, they never disappoint. I don't even care what Nagy's saying. He's just saying nothing. I'm just watching the comments. There was someone today that commented, and they were dead-ass serious. Like, hey, Trubisky just needs 5 to 6 years to develop.
You don't even need to go that far, though. You don't need to go to Periscope. You don't need to go to Twitter. Just look at our text line right now.
I know.
They're saying that Nagy's the problem. Like, there's some people that were saying earlier that Mitch right now has a better completion percentage than Tom Brady.
Nagy has been out-coached most games this year. And this past Thursday, he didn't have a perfect game, but I don't think you'd need a perfect game every time. He's an average coach. I think this past Thursday, though, we weren't complaining about the play calling as much because you're going up against a horrible run defense. He actually gave Montgomery the ball, even though they were trailing early and they needed a late comeback. He had a balanced attack. I don't think you could really complain that much about Nagy. There's confusion at times coming out of timeouts. I'm like, what are you guys doing? What is going on? Penalties, I think a big part of that is on the coaching. He didn't have a great game, but I didn't have a lot of complaints.
But then again, we didn't have that many complaints about Mitch. I want to see what Nagy can do against a good team as well.
Yes.
So I don't think Nagy's going to get off scot-free here because he's coached good against the Lions.
As far as this Thursday, it's one of the few times this year that the better coach will be on the Bears sideline, for sure. Like, there's no debate about it. Lions games, too. Patricia's horrible. My God. Are they going to move on after this year? They can if they want. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. A little bit ago, I was getting a bunch of text messages about an update on sports betting in Illinois. We're going to get one next. Mitch Armantrout has been all over this. Had a pretty cool story in the Sun-Times today. We're going to discuss that. Just how big sports betting is going to be once it finally launches. That's next. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.